Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. In the wake of the unrest last year in Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood, the city reacted with various proposals and initiatives aimed at helping the community. One such program was the Milwaukee Employment/Renovation Initiative, which aims to rehabilitate homes in the area and to offer employment opportunities to members of the community.
Launched earlier this year, the program was met with controversy by residents due to some misunderstandings and some misinformation. Still, the program has moved forward, and we're just now starting to see some results.
Reporter Jabril Farage has been covering the initiative for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers to explain the program's roots and the progress it's made so far.
This was something that the city launched at the beginning of this year in January. Department of City Development officials said it was as a result of or response to the unrest in Sherman Park in August. But these were funds that came from the state of Wisconsin as a result of a Volkswagen settlement. There was this nationwide settlement for the emissions fraud, essentially, that Volkswagen had been under. And I believe all the states received some sort of compensation from that. So $2 million came from the state of Wisconsin to the city. $1 million of it was earmarked for this program, and that's, you know, how it came to start.
You know, you mentioned the unrest in Sherman Park, and it's interesting, they do kind of focus on the quote-unquote Sherman Park area, even though I think most Milwaukeeans will say there are other areas of the city that are in much greater need for the funds. When we're talking about the Sherman Park area, what does that really entail?
Is really what they call the greater Sherman Park area. Yes, there are other areas in the city that have foreclosed homes, many areas that are rougher. But I think when it all came back to it, the stated goal from the city was to in some way address this unrest that happened in August. You know, whether or not this program does that is a question that I think residents have raised, and certainly something that we have yet to see.
You mentioned, of course, the residents, and there was a lot of controversy when this program was first announced. I think there was a lot of confusion as well. What has happened with that?
Yeah, so when the program was initially launched, it was promoted heavily by the city. In looking back on some of the interviews that were done, it was not communicated with enough clarity, both from the officials promoting it and in some of the local reporting seemed to be misleading in the fact that it was not clear that if someone was not a developer and would not be purchasing at least five of these homes, that they were not eligible to participate in the program. There were a number of strings attached to this money that was coming in, which did handcuff the city to a certain degree in terms of having a time, you know, some short timelines, in terms of having to provide the receipts for the work done up front, and then that would be reimbursed. So this wasn't really something that they were able to include residents in. Then, to make matters worse, before the initial meeting for this was held, which was supposed to be an informational meeting for developers, this was reported on absolutely inaccurately by AOL.com, an article that's still up that said essentially come down to City Hall and you can get dollar homes. People showed up. There were hundreds of people at City Hall, you know, just to find out that they couldn't participate in this program. So that was, you know, the first piece. But, you know, even with all of that, when talking about the actual program, residents were very skeptical about what this program was, what it was meant to do, who it was for, really saying that this program is not for us and it doesn't address the issues, which they essentially really pointed to this employment piece. One of the residents and the president of the board of the Sherman Park Community Association called the hiring requirement of one unemployed or underemployed person on each of these homes ridiculous, saying that it needed to be more than that. So there was a lot of misunderstanding. There was also some heavy criticism, and you know, that was then, and there's been a little bit of progress since then.
I want to talk about the employment piece in just a moment. But first of all, how many houses were actually up for sale and how many have actually been bought?
So at the outset, the Department of City Development said that there were 200 tax foreclosed city-owned homes in the area and that they would be seeking to renovate 100 of them in this program. Now, that other 1 million, the other half of the 2 million that came from the state will be used for demolition of 100 homes, purportedly these others. But the goal was to renovate 100 homes. And so far, we have seen one of them renovated. This just happened recently. You know, the first home was finished. 23 other homes have been bought by three different development groups. And then 55 additional homes have been reserved by developers. So it means they essentially aren't being marketed anywhere else. And 38 of those homes have been reserved by Gorman and Company, a large national developer, who said that they plan to close those sales within a month, that they're just waiting on being able to sell the low-income tax credits that they are getting for this, and that once they were kind of able to broker that deal, they would be able to close on those homes and start the process of renovating them.
So Gorman is a big national developer. Are most of the developers who are coming in local or national?
So the one that's gotten the most work done so far, they've purchased 20 homes. They are the ones that have finished this first home renovation. The organization is Strong Blocks. That's a local organization whose mission is primarily to move renters to home ownership. They are a for-profit organization, but they're mission-based, so that, you know, this is what they seek to do, is get first-time homeowners into homes. And they do that through a rent-to-own program. They said their goal or the incentive for them in participating in this program was to be able to do that, essentially. One of the other organizations that has purchased a couple homes so far and reserved five and wants to do more is a local nonprofit called Ezekiel Community Development Corporation, which essentially they are a training nonprofit. So they said, you know, these homes are going to be classrooms for us. It's not so much about the profit. You know, we don't need to worry about that. We don't have the same kind of considerations that a Strong Blocks or a Gorman has in needing to receive some, you know, financial gain from these houses. So they said that they would employ at least four of these hard-to-employ individuals on each home, potentially as many as eight. And then of the other three developers that have so far been included in this program, only one of them has bought a home. I didn't speak with anyone from that organization. I mean, it was called Advance Development Group. And one of the other developers, which has not bought any homes, is kind of an aspect of the ACRE program, which is a local program for developers who are either women or people of color.
So in talking with the developers, it seems like a lot of them have had difficulty identifying some of these under and unemployed people to work on their sites. Why is that?
Well, there's been a number of roadblocks for developers. Like I said, we haven't seen many of them get underway with the actual home renovation yet. Ezekiel is just beginning renovation within the last couple of weeks on their first home. Gorman, as I mentioned, has not purchased any homes yet, but they do have plans. You know, they said that once they finalize those deals, they have a plan to employ 40 individuals, many of whom, if not all, are re-entering society after being incarcerated, and that they have a relationship with Northcott Neighborhood House to achieve that. But none of those people have been specifically identified yet. That process hasn't started yet because they haven't finalized these deals on the homes. Strong Blocks, who is engaged right now in 17 to 18 projects, like I said, they've purchased 20 homes. They've just finished this first. They did express that they have had some difficulty finding or at least keeping people, and that they've utilized 7 to 8 of these underemployed or unemployed individuals. But one of the contractors said that there's been some – that some of the individuals that have come onto the jobs, he said, quote, maybe haven't had the right attitude or understood where they're at right now and wanted to be a little bit further down the line maybe. But they also were hoping to do this through someone else, eventually had to try and identify some of these people themselves, and so they weren't really set up to do that. Now, the other thing that they did mention is that this contractor who I mentioned is from the central city of Milwaukee, grew up, you know, in the central city, has a small business of his own, and that he uses subcontractors who live in North Side and South Side neighborhoods. So there was this really interesting conversation about not being able to employ the people who were specifically targeted by this program, but still really sourcing the individuals that they're using from the neighborhoods that we're talking about, and this kind of back and forth between, you know, this is what we're doing and this is what the program is telling us we should be doing. It was a kind of a really difficult conversation, it seemed, for them, you know, to engage in. And then residents are saying, well, you promised, you know, this program promised to employ these people in particular. And residents really said there needs to be more communication about who is being employed, where they're from, what their stories are, and that that needs to be documented. And that if that isn't happening, there needs to be some explanation for that.
It seems like the program really did start with like a lot of grand expectations. They were expected to have, or developers were expected to have, a lot of things set up by March of 2018. It seems like that deadline has been extended already. Do we have a clear picture of when the community is going to have a clear picture of how this program is really shaping up?
Yes, there were some deadlines that were pushed back. There was initial deadline in March of 2018 to have all the work done and have the reimbursements in so that the city could file that with the state. The state deadline was June of 2018. The city deadline has been pushed back to the end of the year. I was not able to speak with state officials for this story, so I'm not sure if that corresponds with the state deadline, but I would have to think that if the city is pushing back their deadline, they've received an extension from the state. But we're not going to know, you know, based off of my conversations with Carl Quindell, who is the head of Strong Blocks. He said, you know, we're not going to know even within the next couple years the success of this program. And I think this is perhaps the place where some of the concerns or questions from the community are coming from, you know, saying we're not going to know what the eventual effect of this is until 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the line, until these homes are done, until we have the actual numbers and we know how many people have been employed and to what degree and within this program. But then, you know, the other questions are, what kind of employment are these people securing down the line? Was this just something that was short term, or were they actually able to receive skills that allowed them to move into stable, family-supporting, full-time employment? And then once people get in these houses, once these houses are rented, once they're sold, what is the effect on the neighborhood going to be? We're not going to really know those questions until much further down the line. The other questions, though, that were raised by residents was, what immediate effect is this having? You know, this is part of the city's larger efforts to get tax foreclosed housing stock that they own back on the market, back on the tax rolls. But over the last since the beginning of 2015, the city has acquired 2,000 of these tax foreclosed homes. They've been able to sell back 1,800 of those, and they say the majority of those have gone to homeowner occupants. But the question that residents raised is, when people are losing their homes, when someone who can't pay their taxes is being forced out of their home, what effect is that having? What long-term effect does that have on the neighborhood? So there are a lot of questions that haven't been answered yet, and a lot of questions we'll have to wait and see, you know, what those answers are.
Well, Jabril, hopefully we'll be able to have you back in when we have some more answers.
Hopefully. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Jabril Farage is a reporter for the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service, and he spoke with Joy Powers. You can read his full piece about the progress of the Sherman Park Housing Program at WUWM.com.